Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another glorious episode of the Ultra Nerd Podcast. Now, before I go any further, I just want to say you guys could start following me on Twitter at SuperNerd163. And you could also go on, like, say, Spotify, Anchor, or any other forms of the podcast to listen in on each of the episodes. And you could follow me on Twitter or Instagram to stay in touch and to make sure which episode I'm going to go with by giving out where I will give off small hints here and there. And not only that, you could also listen to some of the other episodes I have. Because in each way, we are slowly building small revenue here and there. Like, say, for example, we listen to like four of my podcast episodes. That's like four small bits of revenue, pennies each, on the episode. So I'm sorry if I'm going to play two of the same podcast sponsorships that I've been doing for the last few months now. Because that toilet needs to be flushed over there. College textbooks are not cheap. And I got to keep the lights on somehow, right? But anyway, let's get on to the episode. So a few things I do want to say is, who loves monsters? Just like the giant monsters you love to go around and just like destroying cities and destroying other monsters. It is awesome. And like catching monsters, those types of monsters are even great too. And that's today's topic, our monster collecting games. This is a Games Ready in Memory episode for the Ultra Nerd Podcast. So as a kid, I always loved the monsters. I always loved collecting different monster games to collect them. And it was all fun. It was all different. So there are two different monster games I want to talk about. The first one being Invisimals, and the second one being Fossil Fighters. So let's start with Invisimals. So the game originally came out somewhere around 2010 to 2011. I originally thought it came out, but it originally came out in 2009, which I found hard to believe because I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this didn't come out in 2009, but it did. And it is a really interesting game because it uses the PSP's camera system to look at this black square with the specific symbols around it. It's white with a black square corner core in the middle that basically senses the monsters on the core. And you can basically see them on your PSP. Now, it was interesting. It was fun because what you were able to do was you could go around your house or outside potentially and to find specific colors that the tracker wants you to find. And once you get closer to enough, you find the monster. Now, how to find the monster is it tells you what to look for sometimes. It's like, look for a red surface. And you hear like a type of clicking noise. Every time that clicking noise gets louder, that means you're slowly finding that monster, right? So like say, for example, if I have a white or red surface, what I could what I could potentially find is a monster called a ice beetle or a sting wing. I remember some of the names too. And I remember some of the monsters being an absolute bitch to collect. But the interesting part about the game was that you had the ability to choose what stats your Invisimal had when it was leveling up. Like some of the stats could go be for health, it could be for stamina, it could be for attack speed, defense, damage, and so on and so forth, right? And the cool thing about it was it basically was like Pokemon, but it didn't have like a turn-based strategy. It was pretty much like how much stamina you had. Furthermore, there was like these types of abilities you could use for your Invisimals. What you could be doing is you can give them more health, you can be giving more stamina, you could do different types of abilities that could potentially damage your opponent's Invisimals in some way. Like there's an ability called Earthquake where you have to shake the PSP. There's like a Fire Storm where you have to carefully press X on these types of symbols around the Invisimal and it does a fire attack, so there's that. However, the trouble was if I could remember correctly, of trying to get find an even place to play the game. Now, what I mean by that is you could have an area that's completely in darkness and you cannot properly see the invisibles there. Or you could have like a place that's absolute bright and you can still see it or have trouble because it would say, you need to move closer, you need to move farther. And it was pretty much like the Kinect, but portable. Furthermore, it did have something far interesting when you're trying to find other invisibles. You could find mutant invisibles. So pretty much it was like Shinies, basically. And I remember my first time playing the game, I had a hard time. I remember I made different accounts for it because I just tried the game over and over again until I got it right. And I remember I was like, holy smokes, I gave away one of my invisibles. And that completely shocked me, so I had to restart the game. But when I eventually finished the first game, it also gave me a choice to catch this one other invisible called the Tiger Shark. Now, what they don't tell you about the Tiger Shark, though, but you cannot seem to find it after you evolve the first one you get. And it doesn't tell you how to get a mutant or a shiny of that said invisible. And, like, there's also tournaments, too. And sometimes when you play a tournament or, like, just like have a single 1v1 match with other quote players online or basically the computer, you could bet your invisible. And sometimes if you just like quit, your invisible is captured or stolen from you because you quit. Now that's bullshit. But not only that, what you have the chance to do is if you win a bet, you could basically steal, forgive, or you could basically destroy your opponent's invisibles. Destroying your opponent's invisibles causes you to gain more spark, which is basically like a type of currency. And what I remember to do, what I did was, I abused this one invisible that was like a elephant one of some kind. And what I did was, I would always go into the tournament and destroy it because it gave you so many sparks and I spent those sparks on different items and abilities that are really good and really powerful. Like the elemental characters. There are several different elements in invisibles. If I'm correct, there's fire, there's ice, water, nature, desert, and earth. So six different elements. And not only that, each of those six elements are immune to certain things. Like, if I'm correct, I believe toxic attacks are nullified by desert. Fire attacks are nullified by fire. I think there was also like saw attacks. So saw attacks could be, I think it's either nullified by ice or by earth. I can't specifically remember, but I know what I'm talking about. And there's also like bite attacks and so on and so forth. And there's all these different types of, and the best part are the invisibles have the same name. They stay the same name. So it's kind of easy to remember which one you're talking about, but it goes from like child to cult to max, basically when evolving. And sometimes the evolved forms could be cool. Sometimes they cannot. Sometimes it's best to like leave them as a child because they're cuter that way and so on. I keep saying so on. I'm sorry, folks. But what I also remember about the game was it had a sequel, Shadowverse. Now, the best part about this one is it kept a metric ton of certain invisibles. I remember it kept Ice Lion, it kept Hilltopper, it kept one called Flame Claw, it kept one called Stingwing. I think those are the four that they generally kept. But not only that, it introduced a different batch of invisibles to collect and capture. What I forgot to mention about the first game, but what the rest of the games have in common is you can play these different types of mini games of how to capture these types of invisibles. Now, one of them I can remember correctly was this type of hippopotamus invisible that it kept crying. And obviously hippos need to stay hydrated and still be moist. So what you would need to do is you would need to use your camera corner or your camera like icon to use a bucket, and you need to basically try to capture all these types of tears. And when you have the tears, you basically dump them on the invisible to keep it hydrated. And that's cool. And not only that, there's also like other invisibles that require you to look at it or not to look at it or to solve puzzles. And that's another thing that Shadowverse did, is it had like a puzzle system to it. Now, the sad part is I haven't completed it. I haven't completed the game because like there was this one puzzle that I could not seem to complete no matter how hard I try. Because it kept like, it has like a laser that kept moving. And even though I would try to place the mirrors to hit these types of cores or these types of panels that you would need to hit, it wouldn't let me hit those panels, and it wouldn't hit those panels to begin with. And I was like, holy smokes, this is impossible. I am going to throw this game out the window, but I didn't really. But what I remember is for some reason my PSP decided to give me the finger and it wouldn't load properly. Now, when I would try to go into a specific area for other games, or if I tried to activate a certain game, it would always load for so long and it would be annoying. But one thing I do want to mention that Shadowverse did better than the original was you had the option of customizing your own invisible's color. Now, to many Pokemon fans out there, when you hear that, you're like, holy smokes, really? Because I remember specifically there was like a tournament. And what you were able to do was you could basically gain the ability, it can only happen once after you complete that tournament, to change your invisible's color. Now, it could be like the base color, it could be like the body color, it could be like the hair color. And you could be changing the color as many, many times as you want on any and every invisible. And that's what I did. I remember I would always evolve my invisibles all the way. And when I finally do, what I would be able to do is I would always be able to change their colors however way I see fit and whatever pattern I would always like. And every time I would fully evolve a invisible of mine, I would make sure to capture all the other ones to have a complete set. So like, say for example, there's like a invisible called Robosquito, I think it's called. Badass looking invisible monster by far, in my opinion. And what it was able to do was I had the colt, and once I finally captured it, I would get the adult form first, and then I'll get the colt. Starting back, going backwards, you could say, or going forwards, like I could get the pup first, then I can get the colt. And that's what I always said. But lastly, before I want to say, before I continue on, that I remember the games also had invisibles that couldn't be evolved. So they were those like type of Pokemon that only had one form and one form only, and they couldn't be able to evolve until they decide that they had evolved forms, like Ambipom from the recent Pokemon games where they evolved her into the other version of Ambipom with the two monkey tails instead of just one. And I remember there were also these types of invisibles called dark invisibles. So basically, they were like these types of evil versions of the original invisibles. I remember for the first version, that the first set that they had, there was like Shadow Rattle Raptor. There was like Shadow Flame Claw, Shadow Ice Lion. And it was really cool too. Well, as a kid, but looking back at it, I'm like thinking to myself, like, holy smokes, that game was fun. And I did have a lot of different invisibles on it. Secondly, I do want to also say that the game did evolve further on. It kept the same idea on the third aspect, but I don't think it crossed into here in the West. I mean, here in the East, because no one started to play PSP anymore. And frankly, I thought the PSP was a big improvement over the, now call this heresy as much as you want, but hear me out, that I found the PSP more enjoyable than the DS, because to be fair, you had better-ish graphics, and not only that, you had an analog stick, so you could basically move around freely as much as you want, and you also had a D-pad. But yet, when you play some of the PSP-only games, or like simple games like, say, fighting games, or like games that don't require you to have more than one analog stick, it's fine. Or like playing the PSP-only games, it's still fine. And generally, I thought I still had fun playing the PSP overall. And I felt as if it was kind of underrated, even the PS Vita. Again, call it heresy as much as you want. But an opinion is an opinion. But what I did remember that is, they kind of eventually took away from like looking into the camera that much from some of its more recent games and instead make its own idea. Now, there is something I do want to get to at the last part of this subject, but let's just continue on with what I want to say about the other games. What I can remember about the other ones from what I saw on gameplay footage is that they changed the idea, and instead of having a, you have to look through the camera and you have to have the trap down so you could be able to fight, it was a battle arena, so it makes it a little bit more simple, it makes it a little bit more easy, because you don't have to have the trap there all the time. And not only that, you could actually take a break from having to look, having the camera on, and if you don't have it on your PSP yet. So you could basically take it off when you're about to fight, and you could put it back on when you need to look for an invisible. Simple as that, right? And I also remember they tried to make a 3D platformer game of Invisimals for the PS4. So basically, you're this one kid who was part of an organization to help the Invisibles and not use them as, like, weapons. I can't remember what the organization, maybe that's what it was called. It was called the Organization. So you have these different characters who are, like, these traditional ragtag duo that you would see in other kid shows. Like, you have, like, the one that's, like, the leader. You have, like, the funny one. And you have, like, the smart one as well. But you had the ability to transform your character into these different Invisimals, right? And each of these different Invisimals had different abilities. So, like, say, for example, you could have an Invisimal that had the ability to grapple onto walls. You had an Invisimal that had the ability to ram into stuff. You had the Invisimal that had the ability to freeze stuff, and so on and so forth. And really, it makes it a little bit interesting because each of these Invisimals had a specific ability and specific acquirement for a specific obstacle. Like, say, for example, you need an Invisimal to climb this wall so you can jump to the other wall, or you need this Invisimal to knock down this brick and then quickly change to this Invisimal that could freeze the water. It gives you a little bit of different options that you could use to further play the game and to get into certain areas. And pretty much that's, I would say, kind of genius. But I haven't played it, but I have seen gameplay footage of it, and I thought it was all right, but I wouldn't know because I haven't played it for myself, and I don't have it. But from what I could also understand, there's also, like, a app for it. I don't know about the app, and that's all I have to say. And there's also, like, a 3D animated show about it, too. Once again, don't know much about it, haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure it's also on, like, Netflix and YouTube alike. And overall, like, to compare the games that I've played recently, like the first and second one, what they have in common, and probably, like, the more recent ones for the PS Vita, is once you complete every area and evolve every Invisimal to a specific degree, you unlock secret areas that can let you fight elemental dragons. Now, these are pretty much, like, you could say, end-game enemies. Because you first have to complete a tournament, right? So after you complete a tournament and win two rounds, you go on to the next one. And once you finally get to the next one, you get to face against the dragons. And one by one, I remember that it was either the fire desert. Were probably the rock dragon that got me angry enough. But I also remember the desert dragon being very challenged too. But each of the dragons had their own unique abilities, and once you beat them, you were able to collect each of the dragons one by one. Now, some of the designs are cool. Some of the designs for them can be pretty basic, but most of them are either dragons or they're wyverns, mainly wyverns. But overall, I remember the game being a blast for me, and I remember telling my friends all about it in school, and I remember every time when I would go home, I would always turn on my PSP and start playing the game from like day to dawn. It was a blast, I remember, and I had fun with it. So, before I continue, let's get into this break. Hello, everyone. And sorry for the two ads with the same sponsor, because like I previously said, them textbooks need to be paid and that toilet needs to be flushed and I need to keep the roof over my head, right? So let's continue with the second game that I wanted to talk about. So who could else could relate to me? When you were a kid, you loved dinosaurs. You don't know why though. You just love dinosaurs just because they're dinosaurs. They're these big, giant, brooding, hulking... Sorry, I ate before I done this. And there's these giant, hulking creatures that once ruled the Earth. And they were awesome. Like, you fell in love with dinosaurs when you watched, like, Jurassic Park, like the old movies or new ones. And they're still pretty cool. And I remember back then when I was probably still in middle school, I remember seeing the game Fossil Fighters on my TV. And I'm like thinking to myself, I need that. But then when I remember my friend had like a strategy guidebook to it. So when he and I were sitting on the bus, he was telling me like the stories and like the lore behind like some of the Invasor creatures and some of the final bosses, which were awesome. And I'm like thinking to myself, now I need it even more. And once I finally did, it was worth it. Now let's go back to the first episode, because blatantly, I remember I stated that the game Spectrobes was a game where instead of hunting down and capturing your monsters, you instead dig them up. And I brought up the subject of a game that done the exact same thing. This is that game. So the interesting about Vivisaurs and Fossil Fighters is instead of just like finding your entire dinosaur that you wanted all in one, I'm just going to refer to them as dinosaurs because it makes it a little bit easier on myself. I'm sorry. But if you just like go out and like find a dinosaur, you're not going to find the whole dinosaur. And instead, there could be like several pieces. There could be like the head, the body, the legs, and the tail. And those are those several pieces. So normally when you revive a Vivisaur, it always has to start with the head first. I don't know why just the head. But besides that, the way how you do it is a little bit more... Looking back, I would argue say tedious because you would have to go into specific fields to like use your scanner and to use your pickaxe to dig for Vivisaurs. And not only that, but you would have to like run all the way back to your base camp where they let you excavate, and you have to wake it up by digging the fossil in different by using different ways and different methods. So what you would use normally is either a hammer or a drill. And what you would do first is you would probably like hammer away the harder shell of the fossil first, and then when you done getting at the hard stuff, you use the drill to get a little bit more at the softer stuff, right? So that's like the normal thing to do in the game. Furthermore, what also when you would do is there are plethora of other different fossils and like different rocks to use them with. There's like smaller rocks, there's slightly bigger rocks, there's rocks of different colors to represent the different elements. There's rocks that have holes, there's like rocks that have like claw marks and so on and etc. Thirdly, what I also want to say is it had a unique battle system because you're requiring how many points that a Vivisaur would use. And going on from there, and sometimes a Vivisaur would have like different buffs to increase your Vivisaur or like different abilities to also like debuff your opponent's Vivisaur. And whoever has like that, I think the highest or the lowest points will go first, right? So after going on there, what you will then do is you'll take turns choosing your Vivisaur, what it could be able to do depending on how many points you have, right? So like say that I have like a Tyrannosaurus Rex and he does 5 damage for a 50 attack, right? This is just spitballing. I can't remember the actual attacks, but like let's just take that for example, right? So, but if my total point score would be say 50 or like 500 or 200, after doing that 50 point of damage, what I would then be able to do is probably choose my other dinosaurs to do another attack. Because I would still have the other ones left over that haven't attacked yet. And if your Vivisaur is damaged to a point where it's almost dead, I remember seeing what you could be able to do is you can like make your Vivisaur move positions. Like it'll be able to like go in the back corner, and your other Vivisaur that was like diagonal from it can be able to move into its spot. In the sequel, it changed it. I'll get into that later. Let's get into the game though. But like here's the sad part though. Recently, no, not recently though, but a long time, I sadly haven't finished the game and I somehow lost it. I know, it's completely stupid. It is something that I hate myself for because somehow I have the second game and I completed the second game, but I lost the first game and I didn't complete the first game. It is total insanity. How could I complete the second game if I haven't completed the first game? You may be wondering. I don't know. I ask myself that every day I wake up. But the story of the game was like your character enters in Vivisaur Island to collect and become like a Vivisaur champion, right? So later you meet like a ripoff version of Team Rocket, but it's like a fun Team Rocket. Like they still have like the aesthetic and the idea, like there's a man, there's a woman, and then there's a dog that is able to use dinosaurs to fight you. And that's fun. That is a cool, interesting idea. But then it goes further into this type of rabbit hole where instead of just the ripped off version of Team Rocket, it then goes into the idea that the planet is not just by itself. And instead, there's like these humanoid alien creatures that have the ability to transform themselves into dinosaurs, right? So there's that. But originally, they had a home world, but it was destroyed by a creature that would potentially be able to eat anything in the known galaxy, right? So after that said creature is going to attack the planet that your character is on, you have to stop it by destroying its three hearts on the inside. It is a wacky idea for a video game story, and it was fun. And like there are a lot of different types of dinosaurs to collect in the game. Whereas like you still have different dinosaurs to rank up, or like your current ones, to be going around digging up fossils and rebuilding their entire body. But the more times you collect each different fossil, the more times they're gonna have more abilities and the more times that they're gonna get stronger over time. And that's honestly probably the best part is reforming these dinosaurs that were once extinct and having them as your allies. That is cool. That is badass. And the sequel made it even better because what the sequel did, it done so many other interesting and fun ways of changing the formula to the original that it deserves a spot in like a nominee for like a game awards by far, in my opinion. So what does it do better? Like for the fossil thing, it does keep the same original idea. Like it keeps the, you have to go around different areas. You have to find each of them one by one, right? But there are fossils that have like opposite sides of one another. Like there are obviously like small aquatic like vivisaurs or dinosaurs to collect. There's like big and long ones that are all in one piece. So that's fun. They explored more and more different prehistoric animals. There's like a big sloth. There's like prehistoric horses, prehistoric stags, you name it. It is seriously something fun to explore and to do. And they keep some of the same vivisaurs or dinosaurs from the first game, right? But they also expanded the same dinosaurs and, not just expanded the same dinosaurs, but they also gave us different dinosaurs to collect too. And not only that, for the fighting mechanic, they completely changed that, where you now like just like each, no, wait. I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought here. But what I remember is what you could be able to do, you have a wheel, right? And you could be able to spin that wheel in any direction you want. And what you could be able to do is like, you can like make your one vivisaur that has like a long attack, spin the wheel, make it go all the way to the back, and you could be able to make it attack in the back. Or like, if you have a vivisaur that mainly attacks in close quarters, but he is in the far right corner, spin that wheel and make him in the front and center, ready to attack. Or if you have, like, say, a dinosaur, and you're getting the point, right? If I say, like, oh, if you have a vivisaur that attacks in medium range, spin the wheel to a position where he can attack in medium range. And the story goes completely different, too. Like, I remember, like, there's, like, this other different type of version of Team Rocket that they did. And what I remember was, crap. Basically, there was, like, this, like, bone, let's just call them the Boneheads for now, because that's easy. So the Bonehead Team Rocket team were basically doing their own things to, like, sabotage you and your friend from heading into the dinosaur tournament from where your island, from at the island that you're currently at, right? So what now is you have to like go around the island in different islands to hunt the guys down and to beat them and to make sure they do no good and tell them to go blast off and on again, right? So then you then realize that they have different vivisaurs when you battle them. They have skeleton vivisaurs, which is basically dinosaurs, but skeleton. Still fun, still cool, right? So then you realize that there's like this ancient evil. I can't remember what his name was, but I remember what that there is like this type of ancient evil creature that's been like not around for so long, and he is trying to take over the world, right? So the idol and the champion that you look up to may not be what he seems, and believe it or not, that he is that evil villain. Because a long time ago, that he found the ruins to that said evil villain, the skeleton that had that evil villain in to begin with, popped out and captured his body. So now he's just a lonely-ass skeleton head. So now you have to, like, it's still fun, and it's still engaging. So once you finally think you have the right skull and about to unlock it, you then realize that it's the wrong skull, and one of your friends is now possessed by this greater evil. So you go to an off castle, and you fight him head on, where instead of just fighting, like, dinosaurs, you're now fighting zombie dinosaurs, and it cannot get any better. I remember the boss fight being absolute atrocious, because, like, here's the thing. I remember specifically after 3 to 4 turns, roughly, or 2 to 3 turns, roughly, after you kill a zombie dinosaur, it comes back, and it's like it then went go from like a standardized fight to a fight where you can't take too long, because if you don't kill the zombie, it's gonna come back up and fight you again. And it can get really stressful, even though if you have like no type of vivisaur that could counter or that can be able to help heal you in your party, and it can be really annoying and frustrating. I remember I completed the game with just the three vivisaurs that I was given in the entirety of the game, which was like the blue triceratops, a red spine salamander, I can't remember what the original name is, and like this rock T-Rex thing, right? But here's the best part. The best part is you could evolve your vivisaurs and dinosaurs, right? So there are these special types of rocks that have like a golden dinosaur skull, right? Once you give that t said skull to any vivisaur, well, it kind of depends really on certain dinosaurs, really, sadly though. But once you give that golden dinosaur skull to, like, say, the blue Triceratops, right? It evolves into something far greater than its original counterpart. It has a sword coming out of its nose now. It has far better stats. It has a different color style. It is absolutely badass. And I remember it was the most coolest thing when I was a kid. And it doesn't just stop there. Like sometimes a different dinosaur could like have different abilities. They could have like similar abilities. They could have like different powers. It could like one of them like there's like this type of dinosaur that had the worst stats, I remember. And it was lucky just to hit a thing. But once you give them this like dinosaur golden skull, it goes from a zero to an absolute fear me mortal, because I remember it was like able to break, have different combos. It would have like different stagnation effects to like stag your opponent, and it was awesome. But once you complete the game, you had the chance of collecting the vivisaurs or like the dinosaurs that your enemies had, right? So after defeating a certain amount of enemies that you already previously defeated in the past, you had a chance to collect their dinosaur skeletons. And that's awesome. And once you complete by beating the final boss once again, you had a chance of collecting him, and you had the chance of collecting the other dinosaur zombies. And that is also cool and badass, because who doesn't want that? But unfortunately, all good things cannot always come to an end. Whereas in the third installment, definitely broke the genre as a whole, from what I heard. Now, granted, I haven't had the game, nor think I will ever have to, because I have seen someone on YouTube who have talked about the issues and the downfalls of the game. So, the entire point of exploring different areas, right? So, the entire point of that, and going up to different mountains, going to different areas to collect different vivisaurs by just using a pickaxe, right? Now, I don't know who created it, but imagine taking that idea and literally making it into a car racer instead of what it originally announced. And that is absolute stupid. That is absolute stupid as hell, because why would you turn a game like that and put cars in it? Now, granted, sometimes cars can help, sometimes it can't. But really, it is a stupid concept when you think about it. And you're like thinking to yourself, why did they do this if the game was fine the way it was overall? But to be fair, when it comes to a game and when you call it a classic, it cannot have its own classicity unless if you admit to its to the bad parts about it in the first place. This being the bad versions of the video game of Fossil Fighters. Now, I think it's called Fossil Fighters Champions or Fossil Fighters Frontier, but the gameplay footage, from what I've seen, from what I heard, is, let's say, mediocre at best, because from what I heard, it's like that one time when you don't have the option in Persona 3 to have your allies to choose what your allies do, and instead they do whatever the hell they want to do, right? It's like that. So, and the worst part is, like, you don't even need to play the game because, from what I heard, your AI allies could basically just, like, soak up all your turns that you need to, when you finally do attack, they could just soak up all your turns, and then you just need to just sit back and relax and enjoy the gun show, I guess. Because it is kind of stupid that they would take a concept that's so cool and so fun, and they give it any day, sadly, don't give you a choice to actually choose to attack, because your allies would most likely take that idea from your hands and give you their own attack and be like, don't worry, I'll attack this fiend for you, and they'll attack the fiend for you, right? And I don't know about the controls because I haven't felt them, I haven't seen them, but the designs for the monsters or dinosaurs has gone seriously downhill, right? Like, they have changed it to a point where, like, simplistic designs for the DS, they're like, no, screw those designs. Let's try to make them more badass. And it doesn't look any good than the originals, I would say, because, like, in the original games, they had, like, a weird, kooky-looking anime aesthetic. And if you try to make that anime aesthetic realistic-ish, you are gonna ruin what made it special to begin with. And it's not gonna be the same to others or to hardcore fans of the genre to that anime. And that could be, and that may not be said for like a lot of different anime, but it could probably be said for like sometimes their movies, like live action movies, or like some of their video games. Sometimes. And I don't know anything about like digging up the fossils, but from what I could see and guess, you have to like drive up to a wall with like these different attachments to your car and basically dig them where you are, I think. I'm not sure. But literally throughout the entire game, all your characters are in their car and all the dialogues are from the car, so you're rarely on foot, so it makes it look like that the cars are talking, like the Cars movie genre, and it just makes it absolute stupid. And that will also conclude today's episode of the Ultra Nerd Podcast, folks. I was planning on doing the card and the struggles of a card game to begin with for today, but I decided to scrap that and do the Vivisaur and the Invisibles episode instead. I will probably do that, hopefully, with someone at least to help me with the discussion, probably on the topic of it. But right now, I just want to say I would like to thank my sponsor for today, Anchor, as always. And I would like to thank my listeners who took the time of their day to listen in for the podcast. And if you want to, you could follow me on Instagram and on Twitter at SuperNerd163. And remember, folks, geek is fleek. And if you want to help me out by like building more small revenue, be sure to tell your friends to listen to the Ultra Nerd podcast. And remember, once again, geek is fleek.